Hello, my name is Anthony Patch, and this is another edition of Pulse. Today is the 21st of November of 2024. Overnight, we've had some reports regarding the events taking place in Ukraine, but also the Middle East. And I'd like to begin by tying those two together by way of the leaders. Netanyahu in the Middle East, of course, and President Biden in the United States, of course, utilizing Ukraine as a proxy in its war against Russia. Both of these leaders are acting out of desperation. We'll begin with Biden, who, as you know, has only until the 20th of January, the inauguration of President-elect Donald Trump here in the United States. I portray that date of January 20th as a bookend. The other bookend in this case is Netanyahu, who is facing on December 2nd the beginning of a criminal trial in Israel. Again, both of these dates represent a endpoint for them in their leadership, a potential endpoint in the case of Netanyahu, but of the end of Biden's presidency here in the United States. But nonetheless, both are coming to an end of their terms. Thus, they are both acting out of desperation to accomplish as much as they have viewed as their goals, and those that are working in their administration, supporting them, maintaining them in office, and so forth. For Biden, it appears that he is trying to create as much chaos with respect to Ukraine prior to the end of his presidency, leaving this chaos for the next administration, the Donald Trump administration. There are many other factors in terms of why, what is precipitating the actions by Biden. And one of those actions, of course, was the approval this week for the use ostensibly by Ukraine, but of course these are U.S. forces, boots on the ground, operating long-range missile systems, the ATCAMs that we highlighted earlier in our last Pulse video. The response by Putin has been that this is lowering the threshold for their employment of nuclear weapons. Now, they have made it very clear on the Russian side that they do not want to use nuclear weapons. They don't necessarily need to. They have the conventional weapons to achieve whatever goals they have with respect to the defense of Russia by their special military operation in Ukraine. These are conventional weapons, conventional warheads. We'll come back to that in a moment. But focusing upon the Army tactical missile systems that were authorized earlier this week by President Biden for use in Ukraine with targets within Russia, these missiles have a range of about 190 miles. They targeted areas in the Kursk region and struck there with, by reports, some 5 missiles were launched. According to Russian reports, 5 were intercepted and destroyed. The 6th was intercepted, partially destroyed, but again landing on the weapons depot, which was the primary target in that attack. Since then, the United Kingdom launched from Ukraine into Russia several. There's a non-specific and unclear number, somewhere from a half a dozen to 10 Storm Shadow cruise missiles into Russia. The response by Russia now has been with a conventional. And in just the last hour or so, it's been identified and reported as a single missile launched by Russia that was identified as an experimental class missile of a medium range ballistic design, not an intercontinental ballistic missile, as was earlier reported. Nonetheless, this was a conventional warhead. It was utilized and targeted at the city of Dnipro, D-N-I-P-R-O, and this is on the Dnieper River. We'll come back to the river in just a moment. The Dnieper River runs north to south, roughly bisecting east and west Ukraine itself. So at the southern end of the river is the city of Dnipro, D-N-I-P-R-O. That's the target for this conventional warhead, experimental mid-range missile, just one, that was launched by Russia against Ukraine. At this point, it's not clear as to why this particular city was targeted. I'm sure that will be revealed in the coming days. But the emphasis here is that it is not an ICBM. An ICBM, by size and capability, is certainly a very expensive weapon. So to use this in a conventionally equipped, conventional warhead equipped arrangement really seems to be an overkill. So this leads me to my conjecture, my expectation as to what is next on the part of Russia. I do believe that they will use an intercontinental ballistic missile, again, in a medium range capacity rather than a 1,600 to 2,500 mile range, which typically ICBMs have that range, upward and extending in a strategic application as far as 6,000 miles. If it was hypersonic, it would be 10,000 miles in range. But if we focus upon an ICBM being used, what warhead would it be equipped with in this conjecture that I offer to you? There has been some discussion about a thermobaric bomb, a thermobaric weapon being used against the capital city of Ukraine, Kiev, such that a thermobaric bomb is often euphemistically referred to as a vacuum bomb. Essentially, this is a bomb that detonates as an airburst over a target, widely dispersing very small fragments of aluminum. The aluminum cloud is then ignited by an explosive from the missile, from the warhead, and this causes an instantaneous combustion of the atmosphere itself, thus the vacuum effect. This also results in a tremendous pressure wave similar to that of a small yield, low yield tactical nuclear weapon. Without the need to open that Pandora's box of a nuclear weapon being used, Russia can achieve much the same military effect, tactical effect, using a thermobaric bomb targeting Kiev. Now, why would they target the capital city? I think you can appreciate that most of those in leadership positions in the Ukrainian government are no longer in the capital city, but have dispersed. But it would be more of a psychological effect by destroying a large portion of the city, which of course would kill hundreds and hundreds of thousands, perhaps several million civilians. It would be a psychological effect, not only on the civilian population, but upon the Ukrainian armed forces. I think the intent, in my conjecture here, the intent is psychological on the part of Russia so as to force this surrender by the Ukrainian military. Essentially, that they break ranks, they desert their posts, and they attempt to return to their homes. I think this is Putin's version of a ceasefire. I would expect tomorrow or the next day that this is the event that would unfold in Ukraine. I do not paint or include Putin in the category of a desperate leader as I do with Biden and Netanyahu. Biden wants to, and it's not necessarily him personally, we can all appreciate that. The Biden administration is trying to create as much chaos and then leave that in the lap of the incoming administration. To drill down just a layer, I think one of the primary motivating factors for this creation of chaos, this expenditure of the remaining $7 billion that has been allocated by U.S. Congress for Ukraine, the majority of that money that the administration has openly stated that they want to spend before January, of course, goes into the military-industrial complex here domestically to replenish that which has been expended in Ukraine and that which is en route to Ukraine between now and January, and also not only to replenish but to increase the stockpiles. There's been, you know, the presidential military drawdown, and we have discussed this at length in our August edition of Entangled magazine. But nonetheless, this is driven by money that influences the political leaders here in this country. And therefore, Biden and his handlers are financially motivated to expend the $7 billion remaining to perpetuate the war, to escalate the war, to create this chaos between now and January. And when you look at political events and military events, that's a long period of time. A great deal can unfold between now and January. I want to emphasize at this point that, at least in my estimation, I do not, and I think this is shared by many of the analysts examining Russia and Putin in particular, and the military leadership, Russia does not want to employ even low-yield tactical nuclear weapons. It would only be in the extreme threat against Russia that Putin has stated that they would consider the use of tactical nukes. Now, the issue here regarding the authorization of long-range missiles, the employment now of long-range missiles by two NATO countries, the United States and the United Kingdom. There are reports that France also launched their cruise missiles. What this results in the eyes of Russia, is that these three countries in particular, and this would then extend to Germany as well, they now become targets. The actual physical countries themselves become targets under this doctrine, Putin's doctrine, not only for nuclear, but for conventional warheads. And again, emphasizing the point, Russia does not need to employ nuclear weapons. They can achieve their goals with conventional warheads. Nonetheless, all NATO countries, by extension, by this statement, this red line that Putin put forth on September 12th of this year, that even non-nuclear countries that are in support of Ukraine, support of the launching of long-range missiles by nuclear countries, the non-nuclear by association, would also be on the target list. What this boils down to is not only, as I indicated in the previous Pulse video, that the United States is at war with Russia, legally, specifically, it's a declaration of war. This also now, with the actual targeting and striking within Russia by Western nations, in particular NATO nations, all of these are now targets for retaliation by conventional means. It would appear that Ukraine will be, in the near term, the targets, as I said, Kiev. If that does not slow the acceleration into chaos by the West, by NATO, in the estimation of Putin, then I would expect that following Kiev, if the West does not get the message to cease their escalation, specifically the launching of long-range missiles, then I would expect that NATO nations would be the next to be struck by conventional means. Let's take this over to the Middle East and Netanyahu and his desperation. With respect to Biden, he has January 20th as his deadline. Somewhat of a deadline is December 2nd and the beginning of a criminal trial in Israel with charges filed against Benjamin Netanyahu. He has to give testimony. This causes him to expect to be incarcerated. This results in him psychologically acting out of desperation. And it was just announced today that the International Criminal Court, and I'd like to reference an article on this real quickly, the International Criminal Court issued arrest warrants on Thursday, that's today, for Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Gallant for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity in the Gaza Strip. Israel rejects the court's allegations, which include the use of starvation as a weapon of war and, quote, intentionally directing an attack against the civilian population. Here's how I envision what is taking place with Netanyahu and Gallant, but we'll focus on Netanyahu. And that is, he understands that he has a short time. He understands that he has no influence politically over the court, that the court has denied his appeals and his appeals for postponement. And Netanyahu has used the excuse that he is engaged in defending the country. And so he has perpetuated and escalated the conflicts, some seven fronts now Israel's engaged in, as an excuse, as a reason before the court that he should not be compelled to provide testimony to the court. They've overruled that. Therefore, he is desperate. Now, there is a point to my examination of this, my expectation, that I'm not at liberty to cite here on YouTube because we abide by their community standards. In our live streams, we are able to speak more freely and more openly, and tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern, I will be presenting my endpoint the definitive goal that I believe is the goal of Netanyahu in his final act of desperation. We're going to discuss that at length tonight, okay? But nonetheless, I'll leave you with this. He is desperate and he seeks to escalate both the scope and scale and the means of his conflicts with his perceived enemies and to achieve his goal of total domination of the Middle East. We need to also pay attention to what is going on in the West Bank. There are some 11.2 million Palestinians in the West Bank. And Netanyahu is making provocative moves towards displacing those Palestinians by bringing in so-called settlers into the West Bank to displace them. This is Gaza 2.0 in the West Bank. He is certainly desperate, but this extends beyond the West Bank. And I'll give you one point of where one location that we will be discussing tonight, and that is Syria. How I envision or expect things to escalate between Israel and Syria due to Netanyahu's mental state of desperation. So we have on two fronts, the Middle East and Ukraine, where we have two leaders. We have Zelensky, who is the proxy for the Biden administration and NATO and the European Union, all of which are trying in desperation. All of those cited groups are in a state of desperation. And they are because there's now a new president of the United States that has been elected that wants to bring peace to the region. And as I just illustrated for the Middle East, Netanyahu is desperate, and those in his administration are desperate. In the near term, meaning between now and December 2nd, I think in both regions, because they are tied, before December 2nd, we are going to see major escalation on the part of the United States and Israel. They are tied because of the obvious support of the United States for the activities in Israel. And somewhat conversely or inversely, Israel is directing the United States foreign policy and use of their military to achieve Middle Eastern goals by way of Israel. But indirectly, Israel is also coming against Russia by way of the United States, and the United States using Ukraine as a proxy against Russia. It's almost as if you can make a complete circle, beginning in Israel to the United States, to Ukraine, to Russia, and from Russia over to Iran and back to Israel. And again, I'll elaborate on that circle tonight during the live stream. But the short version is Russia and Iran have now formally signed a mutual defense pact. Israel attacking Iran results in Russia coming to the aid of Iran. Thus, anything that Israel can do by way of the United States, by way of Ukraine, to weaken Russia, weakens Russia's ability to come to the aid of Iran, should and if Israel choose to directly attack Iran. Again, I'll cite this tonight in the live stream, but I do not expect Israel to attack directly. Do not expect them to directly attack Iran. We'll elaborate on that tonight as well. This is a very sobering time. We need to take this very seriously, not in a spirit of fear, but we need to take this very seriously in understanding the mindset of those, not just Netanyahu and Biden individually, but those in their administrations, that these administrations are desperate. And I don't think this is lost on the administration in Russia or Iran. I think from the Russian perspective, they are simply trying to continue their push across Ukraine. Even indications today that they are accelerating their push, their move westward to the Dnipro River, which, as I said, runs roughly north and south, bisecting east and west Ukraine. At the northern end of the river is the capital city of Kiev. And this forms a dividing line for Russia to move to that extent and then stop their progress. I believe that Russia wants to maintain the status quo with minimal losses on their side, minimal escalation on the part of ground troops that are put at risk, with the expectation that Donald Trump is coming in on the 20th of January and will be sworn in and take office on the 21st, and that he will begin negotiations with Putin to seek a peaceful settlement. And this is what Russia wants. They have no desire to move further west. They certainly have no desire to attack Europe itself. There are many reasons for that. But they will maintain the ground that they have gained up to the Dnipro River. They've made that very clear. So, in closing, I would invite you to join us tonight through anthonypatch.com. There are a great many more details that we like to provide that, again, we're not at liberty to provide here right now. I would like to leave you with one little note that you can look up on your own, but there were two internet cables that were cut between Lithuania and I believe it was Germany. Anyway, there were two major internet cable systems in Europe. I don't have them on my notes here real quickly here. I don't think, no. But there are two internet cables that were cut, and we'll detail this tonight. But this is an indication, this is a warning by way of Russia that pretty much at will, they can deny Europe, which means NATO, internet service. For many years, extending back to 2020, we have been discussing here the concept that I offer as a flipping of the switch scenario. It has been our expectations for almost 5 years now that at some point the global internet is going to be shut down. The primary reason for this is to zero out all debts by all nations. This is the Great Reset. The WEF has spoken at length, as we have, and published in our magazine in detail this Great Reset. I think the cutting of these two significant internet cable systems is a warning. It's a demonstration of capability as to the weakness, the Achilles heel of the global financial system that is so dependent upon the internet. Anyway, we'll talk more about that tonight. It's a very sobering time, as I just said. I apologize for the sort of sobering delivery, but it's difficult to get enthusiastic when you're talking about these kinds of events. Could this lead to World War III, as many are trying to say or even warn? I doubt it. I don't think at this point. I think we are looking at two desperate leaders that are trying to maintain their positions of power as an administration. Certainly the president's on his way out, but his administration trying to remain in power in the United States. And Netanyahu himself personally staying in power in the Middle East. But each do provide the backdrop, the probability, the specter of tactical nuclear weapons being employed, which then opens Pandora's box that in perhaps an hour's time, the entire world could find itself engaged in nuclear warfare. There is that possibility, and I have to acknowledge that. But I don't expect that in the near term. I think things will remain at the conventional level. So the next thing that I'm expecting, perhaps tomorrow or the next day, is the use by Russia of a thermobaric conventional warhead launched on an ICBM platform in a medium range trajectory, ballistic trajectory, against Kiev. I'm not hoping for that. I don't want that to happen, but looking at it from a tactical standpoint and the fact that it delivers a profound message to the Ukrainian troops to stand down, and perhaps a way to get through, in particular, to the U.S. administration, that Russia is not bluffing. God bless you all.